Maybe that last shot there, the high five.
Go ball.
Whit Merrifield is gone to left field. And it's been a while for him. So he may as well take his time and enjoy this home run trot as the Royals take a 1-0 lead. But Whit had gone 255 at-bats without a home run. That's his first of the year.
Certainly a sigh of relief, and it's also you feel that through the whole dugout, through the whole clubhouse. The guys, they know the kind of hitter he is. They know the kind of player, and you just want to see guys do what they have proven that they do. It's not dreaming, and he's done a good job as handling it as well as you can. You know, we talk about the consistency is what causes longevity, and the consistent approach that he's had for a long time has allowed him to have success as long as he's had it, and there's more ahead.
Well, there better be if the Royals are going to be any good this year. Whit Merrifield breaking out last night of a big slump, three-hit night. He scored four times, and he hit his first homer of the year. As you just heard, Royals win 8-2. That was the most runs they scored in a game this year, which is hard to believe. We played now 28 games now, and the Royals have their first game where they scored eight or more runs.
It's, yeah, usually you're wanting double digits probably by now.
Surely. They're doing it what day after day.
Was supposed to be as good as what they said it was right now.
Right. Bobby Witt Jr., three RBIs last night. Emmanuel Rivera with a three-run triple to put the game away to make it 7-1. Royals went with the opener. You've talked about maybe going with the opener route, which they really had no choice in their situation yesterday. Gabe Spire looked good. Two no-hit innings. Joel Pampas took over in the third, struck out five, zero runs of three innings. And the Royals win to even that series. And they'll play the final game of that three-game set in Arlington tonight at 7:05. Jonathan Heasley is set to make his season debut as a starting pitcher for the Royals, and he's from Texas, so that'll be awesome for him. All right, Ryan O'Hearn was a designated hitter again last night.
Hi.
Now, the Royals won last night. Clearly, it's because Ryan O'Hearn. And let's go ahead and look at Ryan O'Hearn's contributions from the designated hitter position in the cleanup spot last night for the boys in blue. Ryan O'Hearn last night went 0 for 4, struck out once, left five men on base, and hitting now a robust .087. And yet he was the DH again yesterday. Words fail me. Actually, words don't fail me. I got choice words, but I can't say them on the radio because of FCC violations. I don't understand. This is beyond ridiculous. It's beyond. I mean, MJ Melendez has got more hits in two games than Ryan O'Hearn has. He's young. He don't need a day off. Mm-hmm. And I know what he's probably thinking is lefty-righty batting lineup. Ryan O'Hearn don't hit nobody. It don't matter left or right. So you can't sit here and go, well, we got MJ to get a rest. MJ got a rest his first day up with the big leagues. He didn't play. MJ Melendez could have been the DH easily and just hit. Mm-hmm. And that's better than Ryan O'Hearn. And why do we need to see a guy that's had 5 years to try to prove himself? Do we think this guy's just going to catch on and he's going to put the world on fire for 1 month and then we're going to trade him for a number one draft pick or something? I don't understand the value in Ryan O'Hearn. Like, listen, if MJ Melendez is in the minors right now and not on the bench and available, and you've got nobody, which would be pretty pathetic if you got nobody better than a guy hitting .087. But not only do you play Ryan O'Hearn, you bat him cleanup. This is at least four times now, if not more, that they've played him at the DH in the cleanup spot. Or he's played first, he's batted cleanup. And MJ Melendez is sitting there on the bench. He's part of the future. You're wasting service time with him now. Play him every day. What's the point of not playing MJ Melendez every day right now? You've talked about having him in the outfield in the minors. You know what? He makes an error. Ryan O'Hearn's no good in defensively either. So if you want Salvi to catch and you want somebody else to be a DH, find a spot for Melendez. Okay, or here's the thing. If O'Hearn's not in the lineup, it better not be at the expense of MJ Melendez. And it is. And it's ridiculous. And I know he's thinking left-handed batter versus right-handed batter. It don't matter. You know, all this analytics that baseball does, and Mike Matheny, all these people have talked about these numbers. Did we not see the number .087, which means you don't get on base? I saw this the other day. Over the last 5 years, 255 players or something like that consistently have played over the last 5 years. Okay, I don't know how they figure it all out. Ryan O'Hearn ranks 251st or worse out of 255 in every statistical offensive category.
Yeah,
Why are we rolling him out there and got a 22, 21-year-old rookie that's sitting on the bench chewing bubble gum? I don't. It's just it'd be one thing if the Royals are 18-10, right? It'd be a little bit different. Ryan O'Hearn is a glue guy, okay? Whatever. First of all, if you're a glue guy, he shouldn't be batting cleanup anyway. See, that's the thing that blows me away. It's one thing he's playing. He's batting cleanup on top of it. It's like we're doubling down. Like, you know what? This is what it feels like. And by the way, we're going to legalize sports betting in the state of Kansas. The governor said she's going to vote. She's going to not vote for it. She's going to sign it in the law. So let's go ahead and just go down that route. Okay, this is the equivalent of what Mike Matheny and the Royals are doing, and it's so stupid. This is the sports betting equivalent. You're at the blackjack table, right? All right. You've got 20. You've got a king and a jack. You got 20. The dealer doesn't have 21. And this is what the Royals are doing right now. This is how dumb it is. You want to stay, right? No, hit me. What? You got 20. Hit me. I'm feeling good. Feeling real good. But the odds are really against you. Don't matter, man. I feel the ace right here. I'm at 21. But the dealer don't have to. Yeah, but you could get 21. Hit me. You got a jack and a king. You got 20, dude. Hit me. Oh, what do you know? Another face card. I busted. That is how smart this is. This makes no sense. There are people that are asking the media to ask Mike Matheny why he's doing what he's doing. Nobody has the guts to directly ask the question, which is pathetic. Okay. Secondly, he's probably not going to give you any answer that's going to be something you're going to like, because there's no good answer for this. There's no answer that makes any sense why a guy like Ryan O'Hearn, who's probably a nice guy, and unfortunately he's going to catch the wrath, and that's not fair to put him in this position either. But he's not only is he playing, he's batting cleanup. It is one of the dumbest things I have ever seen in my time on Earth when it comes to making out a baseball lineup. It's almost as bad as Chris Getz leading off. Almost. Actually, it is. It's worse. Chris Getz was better at hitting leadoff. Chris Getz could actually get on base.
I highly doubt he was hitting .087 batting leadoff.
Probably not.
It wasn't great, but it was better than that.
So... Buddy Biancalana, an 85 World Series, batted. He didn't bat cleanup. He hit a robust 200. Got on Letterman all the time. I mean, we could overcome that. We didn't put him in the cleanup spot. Well, honestly, we really don't have a true DH. Well, sure as hell isn't Ryan O'Hearn.
Okay, we're going to live with Ryan O'Hearn.
But we won last night, so I should shut up. Yeah. We won. It worked, right?
We're going to live with Ryan O'Hearn in the lineup every once in a while. It seems to be twice in a while, but anyway.
He shouldn't even be on this roster, be honest.
But here's the logic. You know,
there's logic
well,
to this?
No.
Please, hold on. I got to kick back and put my feet up and listen to this logic.
So, Mike Matheny's going to go on there, and the logic with Salvi and Witt is going to be, it's just a slow start. We're going to just keep them in the lineup and keep them batting through it. So, if that logic is to keep them in the lineup, why not just keep them in some, you know, combination of Witt, Merrifield, and Salvi in like the 2-4, put Ryan O'Hearn down, and you just wait until those guys start to hit. And if the logic is you're never gonna, you know, you wait out a slow start with veterans, why not just wait them out in the prime lineup spots, which you're gonna put them in anyway when they start to hit, because you don't have any Rhino. If Ryan O'Hearn is your plan B for a cleanup hitter, you don't have a plan B. Just stick with plan A, the original lineup opening day, or, you know, keeping those guys, the main guys in the prime batting spots. That's my thought process.
I don't hear any logic whatsoever to address why Ryan O'Hearn's batting fourth. So help me again. I'm going to ask the question.
No.
You gave me logic about Witt staying in the lineup. Well, I get that part. Yeah. Salvi staying in the three spot. I get that part. That's not my contention at all. Give me logic.
I'm not saying I don't. I said there is no logic with Ryan O'Hearn.
Okay, thank God. Yeah. Okay, because you just like the logic. Like there is no logic. You're right. There is no logic, and that's why nobody asked the question, because they know the answer will be ripped apart. because it'll be silly and make no sense.
I know what he's going to say.
What's he going to say?
90% sure. I want to keep a righty lefty.
That's
split.
What. Yeah, sure. That's what he's going to say. Yeah. Which, if you really look at the lineup, he could easily switch that around, and you could have Andrew Benintendi hitting in the cleanup spot and batting left-handed.
Sure.
That's all you'd have to do. I've already looked at it. It's not very complicated. So, yeah. Anyway, the Royals won in spite of Ryan O'Hearn last night. 0 for 4, struck out once, left 5 on base, hitting .087. But the story should be Whit Merrifield breaking out of a slump. At least, is he really breaking out of a slump? He had one game. Let's see if he can continue it to two games. I hope he can. He should be too good of a hitter to hit .140 the whole year. That's fine. The opener thing worked last night. That's fine. Bobby Witt Jr., I like batting leadoff. Listen, to me, this is a thing I keep coming back to, guys. And I know the Royals' offense is not the greatest on earth. I get that. The Royals' offense is, in fact, one of the worst offenses in all of baseball. And that's part of the reason why they're 10-18. I totally understand that as well. But here's my thing. And let me pull it up here real quickly because I want to make sure that I have it accurate. All right. So let me go ahead and I'm gonna go through these. This is the order last night. It was Bobby Witt Jr. leading off. All right, Andrew Benintendi batting second, Salvador Perez third. We already established Ryan O'Hearn fourth. And by the way, Ryan O'Hearn is such a good DH. The cleanup hitter was pinch hit four by Emmanuel Rivera, who hit a 3-run triple. Rivera did more in one at bat than O'Hearn's done all year. Did you know that? Rivera's 3 RBIs with one swing of the bat last night, pinch hitting for Ryan O'Hearn. Ryan O'Hearn has 2 RBIs all year long. God help me. So O'Hearn was the 4 spot and got pinch hit for. Why is that? Well, I really believe Ryan O'Hearn's going to break through, but not in this situation. Okie dokie. Then we got Dozier hitting 5th, Isabel 6th, Taylor 7th, Merrifield 8th, Lopez is batting 9th. Tell me, what hitters in this lineup are worse than Ryan O'Hearn? I'm talking what batters in the Royals lineup, 1 through 9, are worse than Ryan O'Hearn?
Nobody.
Ryan. Nobody! So what the heck is he doing hitting 4th? This is what I keep coming back to. This is what blows me away. And I do know something about what I'm talking about here. I have managed baseball teams. I know it's not the Kansas City Royals. But I could put together a better lineup. Because this is atrocious. Here's the thing. You want your best hitters batting as often as they possibly can. Now I'll give Mike Matheny credit. I recommended this last week. Put Bobby Witt Jr. in the leadoff spot. Right now, he's as good a hitter as you have. And I know he's only hitting .219, but he's as good of a hitter as you have. Benintendi is having the best year of anybody. He's the only one even close to hitting .300 or above. Like, the second best batting average last night in the lineup was a guy that's barely played that hit the 3-run triple, Rivera at .250. Honestly, the second best hitter average-wise, and now average is overrated at times, is Hunter Dozier. Hunter Dozier's hitting .247. Benintendi's hitting .314. Salvador Perez is hitting .98. Okay? Whit Merrifield's .61 after going 3-for-4 last night. All right? Kyle Isabel, he doesn't even get a chance to play on a regular basis, but maybe he should. He went 0-for-5 last night, but they keep putting O'Hearn out there. How about you let Kyle Isabel be the DH? Okay? But here's my thing. Who's your best hitters? Okay, well, Witt Jr., we agree, and Benintendi and Perez, right? Do we agree those are probably the 3 best hitters the Royals have?
Yeah, right now.
Okay, and guess what? Matheny has them 1, 2, and 3. There's no problem with that. I am cool. Okay, so then 4 could easily be, it could be Dozier. It could be Taylor. It could be Merrifield. You're probably not putting Lopez in that spot because of the player he is. But here's the thing. If you sit here and tell me, well, the cleanups guy has got to be a guy capable of hitting a home run. Ryan O'Hearn hasn't hit a home run yet this year. Whit Merrifield hadn't until last night. So if people, this is the thing I hear. Well, it'd be stupid to put Nicky Lopez batting cleanup. It'd be stupid to put Whit batting cleanup. Michael Taylor's not a great hitter. Why would he bat cleanup? Makes more sense than Ryan O'Hearn. Who you pinch hit for with the bases loaded last night? I mean, it's just mind-boggling. Why would you want the worst hitter in your lineup to bat one more time than everybody else in the lineup except for the 3 guys in front of him in the order? It makes zero sense. The only possible logic is exactly what Jason said, and that is, I want a right-left situation on top of my order. Well, when your guy that bats fourth is a DH hitting .08 as .087, who's hit under 200 all his whole career, and you're going to sit here and tell me that it matters whether he faces a lefty or a righty? I got righties facing righties will do just as well as Ryan O'Hearn will against anybody. So please stop with this facade and this joke. I mean, why don't you just go ahead and say you don't want to win? Now, hey, last night, Whit Merrifield broke through. And the guy that pinch hit for O'Hearn got a three-run triple. And your pitching, which really hasn't been the major problem this year. It's been up and down, yes. Mm-hmm. But it's the offense. And I'm sitting here going, your best hitters should hit as much as possible. And your Ryan O'Hearn is nowhere close to your best hitter, and he's batting fourth. Ridiculous.
Listen, I'm going to tell you.
Shouldn't
right now,
even be on the team, let alone in lineup, let alone batting cleanup. What's next? You're going to bat him leadoff?
Yeah.
Why don't you just pitch him? Brett Phillips can pitch. Let Ryan O'Hearn pitch. Maybe he can contribute in that way because he ain't contributing at the plate.
If I had this lineup and MJ Melendez was sitting on my bench, what I would be doing day in, day out, is I'm alternating whatever. Salvi and MJ are both in the lineup every single day.
Yes. Every
and
day.
Whether they're playing catcher or DH, I don't care.
They're in the lineup every day.
They can interchange in both positions.
Absolutely.
So Salvi doesn't have to go out there and catch every day. Neither does MJ Melendez. Now, technically, if I had the way I like I wanted it, because Salvi's getting older, I'd have him DHing every day and MJ catching every day.
Agreed.
And on an off chance, he gets to catch every now and then, right?
Right.
But my normal catcher right now would be MJ, and Salvi'd be the DH. If it was perfect and you wanted to save Salvi's legs and you wanted to save his career a little bit and add a little bit more to it, probably,
right,
that's what I would be doing.
Agreed.
But at the same time, if you don't want to do that, then alternate them.
Sure.
But both of them should be in the lineup with the way they can hit and the way that they have power, right? Like, you want somebody in that four spot with power. That's what we've been talking about the whole time. So if you could have Salvi and MJ Melendez, and I know MJ Melendez isn't proven yet as far as...
Neither's Ryan O'Hearn.
No, O'Hearn is definitely not.
He's had 5 years.
Exactly. So, I mean, take a shot. And I mean, there's no sense in this guy being up on the big league roster if he's not going to play every day.
It's a waste of service time. It's stupid. You know, you've got MJ Melendez. You called him up. You play him. And if you're not going to play him, then keep him down in AAA. It blows my mind. Just you play the guy. You already know your team's no good right now. You've got nothing to lose by playing him. Like, the only thing you lose right now is service time. So if you're going to go ahead and have him on the big league roster, then you might as well play him. And he's not old and decrepit. He's a young rookie. And like you said, I get the point, like, you alternate him. I understand why you don't alternate him, because it's, you know, if Salvi's knows what to call with certain pitchers, you want him to
but
be with
Greinke.
But even
on the other side of that, if MJ's DH every day, I'm fine with that.
Right. I know. I'm just explaining the intrinsics of the game.
Yeah.
Like, for somebody that's, I'm not picking on you, but that's what some people say, like, well, let's just alternate every other day. Well, it's not that simple.
Yeah.
That's not that simple, because Salvi might be, and he knows how to work with Keller and Greinke. Okay, those two should work with Salvi, and if Salvi's got to catch back-to-back days, they're 1 and 2, which they are, and if you think Salvi needs to be, you know, with Lynch, fine. And then MJ is with Brady Singer if he comes back in rotation, or Carlos Hernandez, you know, guys that he's maybe familiar catching a little bit at the minor league level. See, that makes some sense to me. So it's easy for somebody to say, well, just alternate every other day. Well, it kind of depends on who your starting pitcher
is
and your battery, and what, because there are some pitchers that have a specific catcher. Some of the best pitchers of all time have just one guy that's their catcher, and that's the only time the guy catches the whole week is when that guy starts, because he's comfortable with it, and who's going to knock it? And you give up a little offense, but you got a pitcher it feels comfortable with his catcher. They know they're on the same page. So I get that part. But I cannot for the life of me understand why MJ Melendez is on the bench instead of Ryan O'Hearn, and O'Hearn's batting DH, and the only thing you possibly can explain is that you want a right-left lineup. And it's just dumb, because the guy that's a left-hander can't hit anybody. So MJ Melendez can't do worse than .087. I mean, I guess he technically could, but I mean, he could close his eyes and get a hit every couple games. He's that good a hitter. And you're just wasting him service time. He don't need to play 3 games and have 2 days off. I mean, let's be honest with it. Kyle Isabel should play quite a bit right now. Let's see what he's got. If you got him up here using service time, it's not just MJ Melendez. Kyle Isabel should play. Edward Olivares was starting to play on a regular basis. Unfortunately, he got hurt. They kept jerking him up and down last year. Like, we're no good anyway. So if you got these guys up here, they're showing some flashes, give them a chance to be in the lineup every day. And it makes no sense to MJ Melendez. Like, if you don't want him to catch, fine. Let him DH. Or, you know, let him take some growing pains in right field. Ryan O'Hearn's played in right field before, for crying out loud. I don't think Melendez can do much worse.
No.
O'Hearn can't move.
And Melendez actually can move.
He's yes, he quick. Can. Right. So
one of the fastest catchers you'll see on the base pass, that's for sure.
It's. I mean, there was one. That's the great news. But it makes absolutely no sense. Okay, let's go local sports. Regional baseball softball brackets coming out. There's track meets, Athlete of the Week, KBCA All-Star rosters were announced. Got some local kids in that, so Dusty's got a lot to cover here.
Yeah, quite a bit here. We'll go through what's coming up today here on the schedule. The NCAA League track meet is at Republic County in Belleville this afternoon. It's scheduled to start at 3 o'clock. The NPL League meet is at Mankato Rock Hills hosting that. That start time has been moved up from 3 o'clock or 2:30 with the pole vault and high jump to 12:30. So 12:30 this afternoon, pole vault and high jump will start at the NPL League meet. The other field events start at 1 o'clock, and then the running events will start at 2 here this afternoon. The Mid-Continent League meet, which is originally scheduled for today, has been moved to tomorrow in Smith Center. Also, Mid-Continent League golf meet is scheduled for today in Hayes, and that starts at 1 o'clock this afternoon. High school baseball, Lincoln Sylvan Lucas at Canton Galva this afternoon. Doubleheader action starting at 4 o'clock. As Wade said, regional baseball and softball brackets have also been released for 3A and 2-1A. In the immediate area in baseball, Beloit and Lincoln Sylvan Lucas will be in the Russell Great Bend 3A regional. First round games at the higher seeds, semis and finals in Great Bend. Beloit, the number 3 seed, 9-7. They'll host number 6 seed, 7-11, Hoisington Central Plains Monday at 5 o'clock. Lincoln Sylvan Lucas, the number 8 seed, a 2-14 record. They'll be at 17-3, number 1 seed, Ellsworth, Monday at 5. In softball, Beloit and Sylvan Lucas Lincoln will compete in the TMP Marion Regional. In the semis and finals will be in Hayes. Beloit, the number 2 seed at 15-3, hosting 2-16, number 7 seed Larned, 6 o'clock Monday night. Sylvan Lucas Lincoln, the number 4 seed at 8-10. They'll host number 5 Russell Victoria, 7-13, 5 o'clock on Monday. Full brackets for the regional baseball and softball are posted at ncksports.com. Also at the website, you can read about our Athletes of the Week. Ellsworth sophomore Brennan Anderson and junior Chase Boardman have been named the NCKSSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athletes of the Week. The two have teamed together in doubles for Ellsworth for the tennis team to qualify for this weekend's 3-2-1A state tournament. The pair finished in second place, 3-2-1A regional in Lindsberg this past Friday, opening with a 6-0-6-1 win and then a 6-0-6-1 win in the quarterfinals as well. Had a 3-set win in the semis over Gamble and Shirley of Heston in the championship match. A very outstanding team that they played in Dalston and Deutschendorf of Heston. They fell in straight sets there, but their 3-1 record now has them into the state tournament. They're 27-4 overall. State tournament takes place at Harmon Park Tennis Complex in Prairie Village, and action will begin on Friday morning at 3-2-1A state. We would like your nominations for Athlete of the Week. For more information, visit ncksports.com. And then finally, again, the Kansas Basketball Coaches Association announcing their rosters for the All-Star Game set to be played this June. Two area athletes have been selected to play in the game. On the girls' side, Smith Center's Talon Rensselaer will play for the blue team. And in the boys' contest, Cav Colgren of Concordia will be on the gold squad. KBCA All-Star Games are scheduled to take place Saturday, June 18th at Mabee Arena on the campus of Kansas Wesleyan University there in Solana. Girls' game slated to tip off at 5 o'clock with the boys to follow at 7:30. You can find the full rosters at ncksports.com.
My apologies to Ryan O'Hearn. I think what we need to do is, for Ryan O'Hearn's best interest, is go to another team and he'll take off. I mean, that's really the key. I mean, he can bat cleanup for anybody else in the big leagues. He'll take off and hit like 50 homers. But yeah, with the Royals, it's not his fault. It's all the coaching, and he's put in too much of a pressure spot batting cleanup. And if they just put him at 9-hole,
and 18 team,
right? He'll just rip the cover off the ball if they put him in the 9-hole. But no, we insist on him being cleanup. This is a local story, but the Lucas Sylvan News, a USD 299 superintendent, Jude Steckline, retiring after 46 years in education. Yeah, of course, we've known him. He was a coach for many years.
I had a question about when Sylvan Unified became Sylvan Unified instead of just Sylvan Grove, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody was like, go ask Jude. He's in the corner. I was like, yeah, that's true. He's like, yeah, it's been there ever since I got here. It changed over. I was actually here when it happened.
He was the boys' basketball coach from 84 to 2014. And in 96, they won the 1A state title. He was the boys' basketball coach of the year. And he coached other sports as well. So we wish Jude a happy retirement. 46 years in education. Are we going to see people be in education for 46 years?
Not as often.
A lot. I agree.
Not as often.
I don't think we will
There'll
either.
There'll be some, but not as often.
Yeah, I agree with you. The way things are and the way things are headed, I tend to agree with you. Oh, ooh, this is the funnest part of the show. Hold on a second. This will be great. I can't wait. Oh, wait a minute.
Browns win! Look at that Moxie!
It's yes. time for our Cubs update with Jason Broadfoot.
Cubs do wins, brought to you by Devil Dogs on Rush Street. 7-5, which means for the first time in a month, the Cubs have won a series.
Woohoo!
Holy cow!
Absolutely. That was the best update so far that he provided. I love you got the sponsor ready to go there, too. That was well done. Oh, Cubs win. Royals and Cubs win on the same day. Time to pull out the Yingling.
Should have brought a cold down there. Yeah. I'll go grab it real quick.
Go grab some Yingling. I told somebody the other day, I said, have you ever had this beer Yingling? And they're like, what? They thought I'd already drank too much. Yeah. Like, I don't think you're speaking English, Kirshner.
What?
What? What are you talking about? Well, that's crazy. Hey, you can enjoy some Yingling or whatever else you want to drink tonight when the NFL schedule is released at 7 o'clock on NFL Network. We know the Chiefs and who they're going to play. It's just a matter of who and what order and where and what times and so forth and so on. So the NFL schedule release. I mean, the fact that there's a whole show that people are super excited about that just has them announcing the week-by-week schedule. Does anybody get excited about the week-by-week schedule for the NBA? Maybe a few. The Major League Baseball? Heck no. Soccer? No. Any other sport? No. Hockey? No. But the NFL, it's like they got their own, I don't know how long this special will be. Well, I'm sure they'll break down every single game for 10 hours straight
the
after.
The show's probably an hour, but then after that, they spend all the time breaking it down.
Talking about what's the best matchup of the year. Well, you know, we don't know who's going to be hurt in week 10 when Joe Burrow's out and the Bengals play
whoever. Can never get A-Rod and Patrick Mahomes against each other
well,
in
that's
the same
true.
Game.
We never can. that is so, so true. So NFL schedule release tonight at 7 o'clock. It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. All right, K-State baseball team 25-22 overall, 6-12 in the Big 12. Their home record's really good, 19-6, but on the road 6-13. You know, back on March 9th, they played Nebraska. I know Jason's interested in this and beat Nebraska 6-4. Is there anything Nebraska's good at anymore except volleyball? wait a minute,
bowling.
Bowling. Oh, Nebraska's good at bowling.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Still got that bowling team.
Still got that bowling program. You know,
it's a bowling program now. Bowling school.
It's a bowling school. But then Nebraska bounced back April 26th and BK State in Lincoln 8-6. So that's good. The Sunflower Showdown took place recently, and K State took 2 out of 3 from the Jayhawks, and including most recently on Sunday, they won 6-3. So the K State baseball team has a 3-game set against Baylor at home, and that'll wrap up their home schedule. Then they'll be at Virginia Tech for a single game, 3-game series on the road at West Virginia, the Big 12 Baseball Championships taking place in Arlington, Texas, where Dusty was recently for a baseball game, and I went to a game last year where part of the field you can't see. It's a billion-dollar stadium.
Yeah, don't
and
buy
you can't
tickets
see.
In the outfield.
Yeah, don't buy tickets in the left
upper
field.
Deck outfield.
Upper deck,
you can
yes.
do it in the
you
lower.
Won't be able to see the left fielder or the corner where the ball goes, or if it goes over the fence, you won't see it. Why would you spend $1 billion on a stadium and not make it to where you can see everything as a fan? I'm blown away at how that's about as dumb as putting Ryan O'Hearn as a designated hitter like multiple times in a Major League Baseball lineup, but that's what they did. Kauffman Stadium is so much better than, I mean, in regards to sight lines or anything else than that brand new stadium.
There's not a whole lot of stadiums I would think that are better than Kauffman for sight lines,
I agree.
To be completely honest with you, because it's so high up in the upper deck, mm-hmm. you're really on top of it almost and seeing it. And then
in the open,
in the outfield, there's not a lot of seats out there anyway, so they're all lower level
and
in
it's
the outfield.
Open.
Yeah.
You see everything and then the Jumbotron and everything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you there. K-State men's basketball team still trying to get some top recruits. They're getting some big-time names that are coming in some cases to visit. But
listen, I said even like Layden Blocker from Sunrise, he's not a senior this year, but he's in the next year's class, and he's taking a visit to K-State, right? And I'm like, to be honest right now at this point, don't really care whether he signs with K-State or not. I just am happy that those kind of names are coming and taking visits again to K-State. So maybe Jerome Tang can build something here and get those guys in. And so, yeah, I mean, he knew what he was doing. And you know, they're going to work. They're going to try to find guys. They're probably going to have to find a couple of JUCO guys, I would think, to fill out this next year's roster.
Right.
Probably not going to be able to get all of them from the transfer portal. But I feel pretty confident about what they're doing on that side of things. And, yeah, it is nice to see these guys, even if they're – you know, just trying to get an NIL deal and stay at Detroit. No, no, it's nice to see these guys actually taking visits to K-State and, you know, having them on their radar compared to what we've seen in the past.
Our focus on K-State Athletics today brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. Adam Schefter is reporting the first schedule announcement of the day. They said some of this stuff will leak out, obviously, but it won't be the last. They'll trickle in, and NFL probably does that on purpose to get you more and more excited about the schedule release tonight. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs will play Tom Brady and the Buccaneers, shockingly, on Sunday Night Football in Week 4. So it'll be Bucs, Chiefs, isn't that game in Tampa? Or is that in, I think that's a Tampa.
I think it is. I don't remember.
I believe
now.
It is.
And I don't remember.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Are they playing the South this year, or is that the added NFC game this year?
I think they play the South this year.
I don't even remember all the details of it until
It'll be at Tampa Bay. I thought it was. Chiefs versus NFC. I don't think, because they played the Saints a couple years ago, and they played Tampa Bay during the Super Bowl year, so it won't be. That's just an added game.
I thought it might be.
Yeah, because it would be, who would the Chiefs play? They had the, let's see, it would be NFC East this year that the Chiefs
Seems
play?
Seems like it should be about that time.
Well, no, because the Cowboys came to Arrowhead not long ago, wasn't it?
What division will the Chiefs play? AFC?
Yeah, they
played
the East.
It'll be the
West. Yeah.
It'll be the NFC West.
Yeah.
It'll be the NFC West. That's right. I knew that because my 8-year-old claims he's a Seahawks fan now.
Russell Wilson's not there anymore. I'm going to be a Seahawks
fan. And he said he doesn't care. Yeah. He says he doesn't care. I'm a Seahawks fan. I'm not a Russell Wilson fan. I'm like, well, you know what? You're one of the few people that's that way, and good for you.
Yeah.
Now get out of my house.
Yeah.
Because you should be a – I've taken a Chiefs fan. I spent money on it. Well, not on the ticket. I got a free ticket on that one. But spent concessions on you. And that my youngest kid's messed up. I mean, there's no other way to explain it. He's been brainwashed. Like, he does it just to mess with me. And but it's about as bad as somebody batting Ryan O'Hearn for cleanup in a Major League Baseball game. And it's infuriating. But he's gone to Royals games, so forth and so on. And so, this is awesome stuff. People are going to love this. So, first of all, my favorite team's the Chiefs for the NFL. My favorite baseball team is the Royals. All right. And most people that know me really well is KU basketball has always been big on my list. My family is pretty much all KU. Well, they are. And then it's not that we hate K-State or anything like that. Maybe there's some of that in like the kids. I don't know. But then there's my youngest, who kind of got brainwashed, hung out with a K-State fan when they were little in kindergarten. And so he's a K-State fan to balance out our house. Okay, fine. There's a little more purple in our house than maybe everybody would like, but he's okay. So there's one thing he's a little different. He's K-State instead of KU. I've got a family I know that's all K-State, been that way their whole lives, and then their oldest son is now a student at KU. And I was just talking to him the other night at a baseball game, and I said, "You bring any KU gear home to fam to balance it out a little bit?" He goes, "Oh yeah, you know." And he grew up being K-State, you know, with his whole family. So it happens. You got to have that little bit of balance. I'm cool with that. So my youngest is a K-State fan, and he wears purple shirt, this, that. I've even bought a K-State shirt, and I've got him, we've taken him to a K-State basketball game. I've taken him to K-State football games, and so forth and so on. So it's not like I'm sitting here and disowning the kid, right? Okay, so then I've taken him to Royals games, and it was probably late last season. He tells me that, and he's had a Royals shirt and this and that. He's not a – I said, well, I thought the Royals were his favorite team. And I said something like that. And he said, they're not my favorite team. I'm like, since when? Because they're not my favorite team. I'm like, who's your favorite team? The Dodgers. What? Since when? So the other day, my oldest and myself – I mean, this is horrible interrogation of an 8-year-old. He was talking about the Dodgers. Like, Royals stink and Dodgers are good. And he's like, oh, yeah? He goes, yeah. I go, well, they're so great, huh? He's like, yeah. I go, well, you're right. They have the best record in baseball, and the Royals have one of the worst. And now I think the Yankees have the best record. And so my oldest son goes, if you're such a big Dodgers fan, name two players on the team. He goes, Cody Bellinger. I'm like, well, it's Bellinger, but okay, you got one. And that was all he could come up with. That was it. One. I said, you're no true fan, buddy. So he says he's a Dodgers fan. Okay, there's two strikes against him. Now, the Chiefs, he's wore Chiefs stuff. He's run around. He loves Mahomes. We got a T-shirt that had Mahomes on the front. Like, I mean, I totally believe he's a Chiefs fan. I mean, at least I got that. And now recently he tells me, he goes, the Chiefs, and he has this big smile like he's just making this stuff up to irritate me. And he says, I'm not a Chiefs fan. I'm like, what? You're not a Chiefs fan? What? Who's your favorite team? Seahawks. Why? Russell Wilson? No. I think he likes Lockett a little bit.
Yeah.
K-State connection there. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, now let me get this straight. You're in North Central Kansas. You're a K-State fan. That's acceptable, obviously. You fit in there. You're a Dodger fan. You're a bit of an outcast. You're a Seattle Seahawks fan. Now you're lost. And then I thought about it, and I realized that I am part of the problem. It was me that caused all of this. When the National Hockey League announced an expansion team, I was the first member of the Seattle Kraken Hockey Club. And somehow that got him on to Seattle. It is my fault.
Seattle, yeah.
It is my fault. Yeah. My fault. So he's a little bit lost. We'll try to correct him at some point in life. NBA playoffs. I have no idea who his favorite NBA team is, but it's certainly not mine. I know that for sure. NBA playoffs last night. The Bucks get it done.
I'm taking a foul.
And Horford gives it to Smart. Smart. And half court. He's picked by Holiday. And that's going to do it. Milwaukee. A comeback win on the road. They win it 110-107. And Milwaukee leads this best of seven series 3-2.
All right, so the Bucks win last night. They outscored the Celtics 33-21 in that final quarter. Giannis, 40 points, 11 rebounds. Drew Holiday, just you heard it there. He had a couple outstanding defensive plays down the stretch. He had 24 points, 8 assists, 8 rebounds. Bucks are up 3-2, and they have a chance to close it out in Milwaukee in Game 6. Celtics missed opportunity, major missed opportunity last night at home. And, you know, we talked about last year during NBA Finals and do the NBA playoffs. When Drew Holiday plays well, the Bucks play well. He's just a little bit up and down at times. But when Drew Holiday is locked in, even without Chris Middleton, this Bucks team is really, really good. I'll stick. My original prediction before the season was Bucks-Suns, and I will stick with that, even though I picked the Celtics to win the series the other day in 7. And I will stick with the Celtics to win in 7. And I know that makes no sense. And I did that on purpose to see if you're paying attention.
And I know that makes no sense.
Yes, I absolutely realize
that. But you are.
No, on the same. Exactly. On the other hand, it makes perfect sense.
Exactly.
You're always going to. Exactly. Next week, you're going to be right.
Now I suddenly feel like Mike Matheny. I picked the Celtics to win this in 7. And you know what? They easily still could, because nobody is dominant at home in this series. These teams are so evenly matched that anybody can win anywhere. The Celtics easily could have won both games in Milwaukee. If the Celtics take 6, then we go back to 7. And then, like we talked about, the 80% of the time in Game 7's NBA, the home team wins. So I'd still look pretty good picking the Celtics. You picked the Celtics. Didn't we all pick the Celtics?
Yeah.
I think we all said 7, didn't we?
I did.
Yeah, I think we did.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Okay, then the Grizzlies-Warriors last night, a lot of people thought the Grizzlies were just going to be, you know, food for fodder. And I did get one right, finally. I said that I thought the Grizzlies were going to play well and that they'd have a sense of urgency and that they would win. Never did I dream that the Warriors wouldn't even show up. I mean, the Grizzlies without Ja Morant, and by the way, they're 20-5 without Ja Morant during the regular season, something that people need to pay attention to, and I think some people do, some people don't. The Grizzlies scored 77 points in the first half without Ja Morant. Mm-hmm. They won 134-95. They won by 39. It wasn't even that close. They led by 55 at one point against the Golden State Warriors, who have Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Jordan Poole, Steph Curry. Are you kidding me? Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson, Tyus Jones all scored 21 last night. So game six goes to Golden State. And I will say this is interesting. When Ja Morant got hurt, the easy, easy, lazy sports take is to automatically say that series is over. That's the easy, lazy take. Many people that immediately said the series was over had no idea, including myself, that the Grizzlies were that good without Ja Morant.
Yeah, I had seen that they had a good record without him, but I didn't realize it was that good.
I didn't either. They're better defensively without him on the floor. And last night they were great offensively without him. He was on the bench watching. He's out for the rest of the playoffs with a bone bruise in the knee, apparently. But the thing that this is, and this is the adjustments and counter adjustments. And sometimes coaches get pushed into making an adjustment that they weren't going to make. And it makes them look like a genius because they had to go to this adjustment. And the adjustment is the Grizzlies had to go big. They had to go with Steven Adams more often. Mm-hmm. And last night, second chance points, the Grizzlies, it was like 25-4. The Warriors don't have an answer inside. So suddenly, you got the Warriors have their strengths, but if they're not shooting the perimeter shot very well, suddenly things are evened out pretty quickly. So I'm not going to say the Grizzlies can't win game six. I'm not going to pick them to win game six. I get the Warriors winning it in six. That's what I said the other day. But I will say that the Grizzlies, and remember, Steve Kerr is out right now. Mike Brown, the first time he lost a game filling in for Steve Kerr in the playoffs, he was 11-0 prior to last night, which is a crazy stat. But I'm not going to underestimate the Grizzlies here. They may have found something accidentally because of an injury. And we have seen this a few times in sports. The Eagles accidentally found something with Nick Foles and won a Super Bowl. Now, I'm not saying the Grizzlies are going to be NBA champions. But this Grizzly team, for the lay basketball fan out there that just thinks, well, it's Ja Morant, and we acknowledge star players, and we forget there's actually other players on the team besides the star player, this Grizzly team is really good. It's got some really good young players besides Ja Morant. Desmond Bane is one of the best draft picks in the last 10 years. What he's done out of TCU, he is a sharpshooter, terrific talent. Dylan Brooks is an outstanding two-way player. Steven Adams is a solid veteran that knows how to play. He's been on teams that have won lots of games and made the playoffs. Jaren Jackson Jr. is a young, possibly star in the making. I mean, Tyus Jones is a very capable point guard, more of a backup guy, but he can step up, and he did last night. I mean, the Grizzlies have a lot of very talented younger players, and a lot of people just get stuck on they have Ja Morant, and that's it. They're wrong.
Yeah, that's what happens when you have a superstar sure. like that. It's Absolutely. Budding, you know, like right. that. This is why they're so good. That's why they got the 2 seed. They're the Ja Morant. The Memphis Ja Morants, right?
Like, the reason they got the 2 seed is they went 20-5 without him.
Yeah, and but that's the thing about the NBA too, and that's the detriment when people are thinking about teams too of the way the NBA markets their stars, right?
They identify just
like
the players.
You think that if you lose this guy, then well, that team's not any good because he's not there anymore,
right?
Well, yeah, they're still good, and you know, fortunately for the Bucks, Middleton's their second guy, right? So everybody's not freaking out as much about that,
right,
as they are about Ja Morant not playing for the Grizzlies, who are an upstart team, and they feel like he's the reason, right? And so, listen, these teams don't get to where they're at because of one player.
No.
Ever. In the history of the NBA, like LeBron James taking that 07 Cleveland Cavaliers team to the finals may be the exception to the rule.
I still think in LeBron's career, that's the most impressive thing he's ever done.
Yeah. But he was also playing in an Eastern Conference that wasn't as heavy as it has been at times.
Pistons were aging.
But he found out when he got to the finals that he was playing in the weaker conference when he got swept by the Spurs.
Right.
But it's like, you know, that right there might be an exception to the rule. Mm-hmm. But you can't find a whole lot of instances where one dude just said, I'm going to take y'all. Yeah. To the end.
No.
And it just doesn't happen. And so obviously you've got a lot of stars. You've got a lot of second tier players, a lot of different guys that are building this team and molding it into what it is to be the number 2 seed in a conference. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not going to be the number 2 team in the West with just one guy.
No, no. It was impressive. They just absolutely destroyed the Warriors last night. Coming up tonight in the playoffs, 2 road teams have a chance to advance. Game 6, the Heat in Philadelphia, 6 o'clock in Philly. Heat up 3 games to 2. The Suns are up 3-2 on the Mavericks game, 6-8:30 in Dallas. Both games tonight on ESPN. I think Jason and I both had the Suns finishing up in six. You had the Suns in seven, I think. Yeah. And then you had the Sixers in seven. I had the Heat in seven.
I had the Sixers.
You had them in six. Actually. So yeah, you're done. Yeah. He's eliminated. Jason had seven. the Sixers in seven. He had Sixers winning on the road in game seven. So now it could be Heat in six, which means we'd all be wrong. That sounds about right, doesn't it? Nuggets center Nikola Jokic has been named the league's MVP for the second straight season. He averaged 27 points, 14 rebounds, 8 assists. That's not bad. They were 6th seed in the West, and remember, did it without Jamal Murray, who was out all year with the ACL. But they lost in the first round against the Warriors. And I see people holding against Jokic that he lost in the first round of the playoffs the last 2 years when he's been MVP. Well, let's see. He lost in the first round against a Warriors team that has possibly three or four Hall of Famers. And they were the 3 seed going in. You know, it's interesting how people twist things to fit their own rationale and agenda, as we talked about 1,000 times. Instead of looking at it as, well, yeah, he's MVP, but how good is he if they can't get the first round? He's the MVP because the Nuggets were a 6 seed. Because you take him off that team, they don't even come close to being in a play-in. And oh, by the way, look what he did compared to a guy named LeBron, who had arguably more talent around him.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably. 65 first-place votes for Jokic. Embiid was second with 26. Any problem with Jokic being the MVP of the NBA?
No problems?
No
issue with it.
You're cool with it? That's too bad, because we could have had a fun topic to discuss that if you guys didn't like it.
Joel Embiid should have been the MVP, and I'll lay my fist down and say that's the truth.
Well, you are a big Sixer fan. You picked him to win in six. Yeah, I have no problem with it. And Embiid's got a chance to win it down the line anyway, so it is what it is. Hockey last night. Man, it sounds like a chipmunk. That's kind of like the voice there. It was different. Seems like it's sped up or something. But is that the real voice?
Yeah, it was what I got off the video.
Wow, that's interesting. NHL playoffs. Calgary Flames go on to win game 5-3-1 over the Stars in Calgary. They take a 3-2 lead in that best of seven. The Rangers stayed alive last night with a game 5 win over the Penguins in New York. Penguins still up 3-2 in that series. The Panthers of Florida winning over the Capitals 5-3. They're up 3-2 in their best of seven. Tonight in the Stanley Cup playoffs, Hurricanes try to finish off the Bruins in Boston. Game 6 at 6 o'clock. Hurricanes up 3-2. Maple Leafs are up 3-2. Chance to close out the two-time defending Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning in Tampa tonight at 6:30 in Game 6. St. Louis Blues have a chance to wrap up their series at home tonight as they lead 3-2 over the Wild, and that's at 8:30 tonight in St. Louis. And the LA Kings have a chance to close out their series up 3-2 on the Oilers. They host Game 6 in LA tonight at 9 o'clock. Another sport that is a pretty big deal is ping pong. We got a tabletop for our pool table to play ping pong, about 4, 5, 6 months ago. So we play a little bit of ping pong downstairs. But the bullet call has Roy Scoggin is the first county ping pong. He wins the first county ping pong open. I've heard stories over the years. BP's told me that, and then his son Blaze was helping put this whole thing together. Mm-hmm. But BP had told me years ago, I don't know how we got talking about ping pong, which is really weird. That's not exactly a mainstream sport. Although if you watch the ping pong, they have them in the Olympics, I believe.
Yeah.
It's insane how good these guys are. But he had told me that Roy Scoggin is like absolutely unbelievable ping pong player. He obviously took care of business.
Yeah.
As he's on the front. He won the doubles and the singles. He won the doubles and he had no partner. That's how good he is.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm kidding. He had John Abercrombie as his partner. Sorry, John. John knows that Roy carried the weight there.
Yeah.
In fact, John knew that and gave Roy both trophies. No, I'm kidding again. But I've heard he's a pretty doggone good ping pong player, and he's now the champion of Mitchell County. Until I start training 24/7, 365, downstairs on my ping pong table until I am ready. And then it'll be like boxing. I'll be ready to challenge Roy Scoggin one-on-one to the ping pong match of the year in North Central Kansas. You just wait.
Yeah. I thought for a little bit about doing that, but I had seen it too late, really, to even think about actually doing it. But because I feel like I'm a pretty good ping pong player. Mm-hmm. I think
you and me might have to have a battle.
Yeah, we grew up playing it a lot out of the house. We didn't have a standard pool ping pong table, mm-hmm. but we we played it and had a lot of fun with it. And my sister actually just got one, so we played a little bit out there in her garage too. So
it's fun.
I enjoy it, and I enjoy kind of playing people that aren't expecting.
Yeah.
But Roy would not be the good competitor for that. Think like, so. He would just mop us up, probably.
He'd probably, like, half try and beat you 11-1 or something like that. All I know is I'm gaining a lot of confidence pulverizing my 8 and my 15-year-old in ping pong. That does me a world of good. And bring on Roy.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.